Good morning, everyone. My name is Elaine Harris, and I'm a member of the congregation here. And I want to welcome everyone that's here in the congregation today, and those that are listening to us online, or those that will be listening to us in recording later. And a special hello to Will, who texted me this morning, Will O'Connell, who's sitting in Phuket in 30 degrees heat and said he was tuning in today. We're not a bit jealous at all, Will. So I'm taking the service today as part of our proud tradition of having an open pulpit here. It's a gift that we have in this church that people can come and share their opinions and their thoughts. I've been on the receiving end of services from a wide member of congregations, wide members of congregations here, and you always learn something new. You may not always agree with what they say. You certainly may not agree with what I say. And I think that's part of the strength of our community, of our congregation. So please take the time to listen to what I say, and if you don't agree with me, that's great. I absolutely think that that's fantastic that we have that freedom here. But if you don't agree with me, go and see Bridget afterwards and say that you want to take a service, because it's a really good thing that we hear different opinions here. So, our opening words. I use the words of the Reverend Leslie Takahashi, who serves as the lead minister for the Mount Diablo Unitarian Universalist Church in Walnut Creek, California. We gather as many drops, each winding our own path down life's surfaces and ruts. Here we pool together as a single body, flowing together for a time. Together we are a stream, at times even a river. For with our shared force, we can travel onwards towards oceans of meaning and seas of connection. So, to light the chalice this morning, I use the following words. In the mystery of life about us, there is light. It gives us a place to be, to grow, to rejoice together. It opens the pathways to love. In this place of friendship, there is freedom. Let the light we kindle go before us, strong in hope, wide in goodwill, inviting the day to come. And now we'll have our first hymn, hymn 159, This Is My Song.
Thank you.
And if you'd like to open the back of the hymnal, perhaps you will join me in speaking of the affirmation of this service, or this congregation. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest of truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve mankind in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow in harmony with the divine. This do we covenant with each other and with God. And our first reading this morning is by Janet.
Good morning, everybody. For today's reading, I'm reading out of a book titled The Poetry Pharmacy, and it's by William Seagart. This reading might be filed away in the entertainment section. That's not to say that the message isn't very important, it is, but it's told in a very light-hearted and lovely way. I've a few loves in my life. This church, this community, and this building is one of them. And one of the others is our four-legged furry friends, dogs. So when I came across a chance to include dogs, as well as impart a message, I just couldn't resist. There's two parts to this. There's a few words, and then there's a poem. And what the writer tries to do is to attach a poem to treat certain human conditions. And the condition he is trying to advise us on today is failure to live in the moment, also suitable for fretfulness, regret, self-recrimination, and worrying. And there's a beautiful poem attached titled Golden Retrievals by Mark Doty. You'll have to use your imagination when listening to the poem. It's as if it has been composed by a golden retriever. So, here we go. We've all been told to live in the moment before. It's become something of a catchphrase of self-help culture. But just as with so many other seemingly simple pieces of advice, it can be very hard to know what living in the moment actually means and what it might look like. Buddhists sometimes talk about the second arrow, the suffering we inflict on ourselves by worrying about future pain or by regretting past mistakes. Sometimes the things we dread surprise us by being far less awful than we feared. Sometimes our agony over a past deed is out of all proportion to the act itself. In such cases, it may be our thoughts and not the reasons for them that do the most damage. The second arrow is deadlier than the first. Evidently, we need to learn to avoid shooting that second arrow at all. This, Mark Doty tells us, is where the golden retrievers come in. Ball, squirrel, pond. These are the way that dogs navigate the world. Their day-to-day experience is exactly that. Experience. If we could let the average, well-looked-after dog teach us how to live as it does, to bounce from excitement to excitement without ever pausing for analysis, perhaps we could be as joyful as it. Tomorrow, if that's what you call it, can wait until tomorrow. Granted, living like a dog full time might not be exactly convenient, but for a few minutes, for the length of a walk, surely we can respond to the rallying call, the Zen bow wow of the golden retriever, for that long at least. Golden Retrievals by Mark Doty. Fetch, Balls and sticks capture my attention seconds at a time. Catch? I don't think so. Bunny, tumbling leaf, a squirrel who's, oh joy, actually scared. Sniff the wind, then I'm off again. Muck, pond, ditch, residue of any thrillingly dead thing. And you? Either you're sunk in the past half-hour walk, thinking of what you can never bring back, or else you're off in some fog concerning tomorrow? Is that what you call it? My work, to unsnare time's warp, and woof, retrieving my haze-headed friend, you. This shining bark, a Zen master's bronzy gong, calls you here. Entirely. Now. Bow wow, bow wow, bow wow.
And now Michael is going to take the children's story.
How many, do we have any kids in at the moment?
We've one victim.
Sorry, child. How you doing? I'm Mike. What's your name?
Cullen.
Yep. Did I hear that you've recently had a birthday? Did you have a birthday? When did you have your birthday?
November.
Did you have a nice party?
Mm-hmm. But we have a special birthday today. Palmery.
Ah. Perfect. I think a round of happy birthday might be in order. That's what this church is all about. Getcha.
Right. Cullen, we're going to read a story. And this is called All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. Do you know what kindergarten is?
Yeah,
kindergarten. I love that word. Children's garden. I like the way the Finns have all, with their education, have gone back. They've taken it out of the classroom and actually get out into the snow and everything else, and it's actually a garden. Their whole approach has changed to us. But this is by a cap, and I never get his pronunciation of his name right. It's Robert Fulghum. Okay. And this is what it is. All I really need to know about how to live and what to do and how to be, I learned in kindergarten. Wisdom was not at the top of the graduate school mountain, but there in the sand pile at school. So these are the things he learned. Share everything. Play fair. Don't hit people. Put things back where you found them. Clean up your own mess. Don't take things that aren't yours. Say you're sorry when you hurt somebody. Good one here. Wash your hands before you eat. Flush. Warm cookies and cold milk are good for you. Live a balanced life. Learn some, think some, draw and paint and sing and dance and play and work every day some. Take a nap every afternoon. Who remembers those words? Te a cola. When you get to 50, they really become important. When you go out in the world, watch out for traffic. Hold hands and stick together. Be aware of wonder. Remember the little seed in the styrofoam cup. The roots go down and the plant goes up. And nobody really knows how or why. But we're all like that. Goldfish and hamsters and white mice, and even the little seed in the styrofoam cup. They all die. So do we. And then remember the Dick and Jane books. And the first word you learned, the biggest word of all, luck. Now, finish off with a small piece here. Think what a better world it would be if we all, the whole world, had cookies and milk at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then lay down with our blankies for a nap. or if all governments had a basic policy to always put things back where they found them and to clean up their own mess. I think Greta's onto something there. I think that's where she needs to come back and get that message across. And it is still true. No matter how old you are and when you go out in the world, it is best to hold hands and stick together. And thank you for the birthday.
Thank you, that was beautiful. For my reading, I've chosen a poem I learned as a child, The Splendor Falls by Alfred Lord Tennyson. When I was small, I loved its imagery, especially the idea of elves making music in the mountains. But now it's the third verse that captures my thoughts and how we echo from soul to soul and form connections everywhere. And that reflects what I want to speak about in my address. The Splendor Falls by Alfred Lord Tennyson. The splendor falls on castle walls and snowy summits old in story. The long light shakes across the lakes and the wild cataract leaps in glory. Blow, bugle, blow, and set the wild echoes flying. Blow, bugle, answer, echoes, dying, dying, dying. Oh, hark, oh, hear, how thin and clear, and thinner, clearer, farther going. Oh, sweet and far from cliff and scar, the horns of Elfland faintly blowing. Blow, let us hear the purple glens replying. Blow, bugle, answer, echoes, dying, dying, dying. Oh, love, they die in yon rich sky. They faint on hill or field or river. Our echoes roll from soul to soul and grow forever and forever. Blow, bugle, blow, and set the wild echoes flying. Answer, echoes, answer, dying, dying, dying. So now we come into a few moments of silence and reflection. And as we do, perhaps we might give pause and thanks for all those in our lives who bring us joy, who bring us happiness, who bring us comfort, for all those who are there, who are the people that catch us when we need them.
May the Lord
I've taken the title of the address today, The People There to Catch Us, from a documentary made last year. It, in part, tells the story of Tom Hope and Rachel O'Mahony, two cancer survivors who work alongside researchers at Precision Oncology Ireland to help improve the lives of others living with this disease. The documentary was produced by Ronan Cassidy of Carbonated Comet and directed by Luke Brabazon, and it was funded under Curram's Science on Screen Public Engagement Programme. It premiered in the Galway Film FLA last year, and then it was shown in the Stella Cinema here in Dublin on World Cancer Day, September 24th. The documentary shines a light on the lived experience of cancer patients, their contribution to the research, and the ongoing research of centres like Curram and Precision Oncology Ireland that will shape how cancer will be treated in the future. I'm a researcher in Curram, which is a Science Foundation Ireland-funded centre, and its aim is to develop novel medical devices to treat a wide range of diseases, from cancer to diabetes. There are over 650 funded researchers in Curram, and we range from oncologists to geneticists to bioengineers to regulatory scientists, and we all work together to bring these projects to a successful, hopefully successful outcome. But this film is not just about the scientists involved in this work. As I said, it highlights the lived experience of these two cancer survivors, Tom and Rachel, and the role they play in working with us in our endeavours. We term this public and patient involvement, PPI, and PPI is built into all of our research projects. So what has that got to do with all of us sitting here today? Well, let me take you back to New Year's Day, and I was sitting just there beside Michael at the favourite reading service, and Dennis Aylmer read from John Donne's poem, No Man is an Island. No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less, as well as if a promontory were, as well as any manner of thy friends or of thine own were. Any man's death diminishes me, because I am involved in mankind. And therefore, never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. So that got me thinking. No man is an island entire of itself. Well, logically, that makes sense to me. We're all connected, and we live our lives, our ska a caela, in each other's shadows. Now, I'm sure many of you grew up in small towns or small villages or in small neighbourhoods, and you really did live in each other's shadows. You knew everyone, and everyone knew you. And when I say they knew you, they knew everything about you. Your seed and your breed, as my granddad used to say. Now, I still live near the village I grew up in, and my kids are fascinated that it can take me 20 minutes to walk down 200 yards of the street, because I stop and I chat to so many people that I've known since my childhood on the way down. And they can't believe that not only do I know so many of them, but I'm related to most of them in one way or another. I am of my village. My people are from there, have lived there, loved there, died and are buried there going back 6, 7, or 8 generations. I live about 3 miles from that village now, in one of the thousands of carbon copy estates that rings our towns and our cities. And I've lived in this estate for half my life, and yet I only know a handful of people in my cul-de-sac of 20 houses. Sure, I'm on waving hello from the car at my neighbours, terms, and I would be friends with a few of them, but I don't even know the name of the woman whose house is less than 30 feet away from mine, and she's probably lived there 10 years. I don't know if that rings true for you or not, but that's certainly my lived experience. Most of the time, if I'm working, I'm out of the estate by 7, I'm back late in the evening, and I could go for weeks, especially in the winter, without ever even bumping into a single one of my neighbours. There's no living Erska Achelga here. We live in our boxy little houses, we jump into our boxy little cars, and we zoom off to work or school or whatever, and we head home, back into our houses, and do the same thing the next day and the next and the next. No man is in an island entire of itself, as Dennis read a few weeks ago. Well, sometimes I feel that a lot of the way we live our lives is exactly that, as unconnected islands. And I think the past few years of forced isolation due to COVID has only accentuated this. We're seeing significant increases reported in poor mental health and development issues with children and teenagers. A June 2022 ESRI report, produced in partnership with the Department of Children, Equality, Disability Integration and Youth, showed that the COVID-19 pandemic has resulted in poorer mental health among young adults. Using data from the Growing Up in Ireland COVID-19 survey carried out in December 2020, the findings show that 4 in 10 22-year-old men and over half, 55%, of 22-year-old women were classified as depressed. These were much higher figures than 2 years previously, when 22% of men and 31% of women were classified as depressed. Poorer mental health during the pandemic reflected the disruption to young adults' lives, to their employment, their education, and their day-to-day activities. And although this report speaks to issues identified with young adults, these effects are mirrored across the whole population. And these figures are stark. The level of disconnectedness felt by our young people is huge. And we can't just assume that post-COVID this will resolve itself. It won't. And we will all feel its effects for years to come. Anecdotally, I see it in my own work as a lecturer and as a parent of young adults. When we transitioned back to face-to-face lectures last year, I had classes with students who had had almost all of their first 2 years of university life online. They were now physically in class with classmates who they'd only ever met virtually. And we've all had to rethink our assumption that things would just go back to how it used to be. Now, I know we can all use our phones as crutches in awkward social situations, but walking into a full lecture theatre or class that is totally silent because everyone is staring at their own screen is absolutely unnerving. Post-COVID, our students have really struggled to engage in real life, to work in groups for assignments, to form friendships, to socialise. Most have expressed a preference for at least some of their lectures to return back to being delivered remotely. College society memberships are down. Students don't appear to want to spend as much time on campus. Now, I don't know about you, but for me, the best part of school or college was that unstructured time hanging out in a students' union or a common room just chatting. But that isn't the lived experience now. And it's not just students, and it's not just young people. More older people are reporting feeling lonely or experiencing social isolation. And we know this is both a social and a health issue. A 2019 report from Trinity's longitudinal study on ageing highlighted that social relationships are of fundamental importance as a source of support, reciprocity, and well-being. The absence of these strong social supports in the form of loneliness and social isolation have been shown to be harmful both physically and psychologically. Smaller social networks are also associated with early mortality. Indeed, there is an increasing body of research linking loneliness to an excess mortality risk, which is comparable to that of smoking or obesity. Conversely, strong social ties have been shown to protect individuals from emotional distress, cognitive decline, and physical disability. So, what are we going to do about this? What should we do about this as an individual, as a community? I'm sure you're not going to be shocked when I say I don't really have any of these answers, but I do know it's a conversation we need to have. We need to have it in our families, with our kids, with our friends, and maybe even in this community. Now, I know this community does a really good job of being the people there to catch us. When I was thinking about this address, I tried to think of all the ways people are those people there to catch us. And I realise that there are probably hundreds of ways, both big and small, that all those sitting here and listening in do just that. But maybe there's even more ways we can. And this is definitely something I think we should explore, maybe even chat about downstairs at coffee after this service. But talking about it isn't going to be enough. Let's get practical here. We know we need to gather people around us. We need to gather people around us that are there to catch us. They may catch us when we're hit with the really big things in life, like a cancer diagnosis, or even when life is just a little bit grey or dreary or overwhelming or scary. And we need to seek them out and hold them dear. And this sentiment is echoed beautifully in the words of one of my favourite songs, which is White Wine in the Sun by Tim Minchin, when he tells his daughter that he and his family will always be there for her, as he puts it. But you will learn someday that wherever you are and whatever you face, these are the people who will make you feel safe in this world. So maybe we should look at some small practical things we can do to address issues of isolation and disconnectedness. In an address I took here a few years ago, I spoke about how you might set about tackling a seemingly huge task and asked the question, how do you eat an elephant? And the answer is, of course, one bite at a time. Seemingly small interactions that you have with other people can have huge impacts for the good. And I'm sure each of you can think of examples in your own lives. In that previous address, I spoke about a really difficult time that I was going through and of standing at a school waiting to collect my kids and uncontrollable tears flowing down my face and a man from the class who I didn't even know well loading me and my kids into her car and bringing me back to her house and sitting with me as I just tried to get through this. She didn't ask me to explain. She just fed all the kids, plonked them down in front of the TV and sat with me and gave me some tea and biscuits and gave me some space. She was there to catch me that day, and I'll forever be grateful. As I've said already, the title of this address is taken from the documentary about all the people involved in helping and supporting you as you go through the diagnosis and treatment of cancer. It speaks to patients and their families, clinicians, researchers, nurses, and time again, the importance of the personal interaction and connection during this process was highlighted. The one story that struck me most was when Tom, a person who himself had undergone cancer treatment, discusses how he is now a volunteer that drives other people to their treatment. He speaks about how sometimes people just want to sit in silence with him as he drives them to and from the hospital. Sometimes they want to have a cry. And sometimes they want to speak to him about what they and he have gone through. But he is there as a safe point of connection with them on this journey, one where it's far too easy to feel you are alone. So I'm not suggesting that this is something we all need to rush out and do, but I do think it would be a wonderful thing for us to sit with ourselves and see where we might have opportunities for connections, however small, to help build up that network we all need, a network of small connections of people we share interests and passions with, or bigger connections with friends or family members who are, as Tim Minchin, who I quoted above, calls, the people who make you feel safe in this world. Bill Darlson is very fond of quoting Robert Fulghum's "All I Really Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten," and if it's good enough for Bill, it's good enough for me. Without realising it, we fill important places in each other's lives. It's that way with the guy at the corner grocery, the mechanic at the local garage, the family doctor, teachers, neighbours, co-workers. Good people who are always just there, who can be relied upon in small, important ways. People who teach us, bless us, encourage us, support us, uplift us in the dailiness of life. We never tell them, I don't know why, but we don't. And of course, we fill that role ourselves. There are those who depend on us, watch us, learn from us, take from us, and we never know. You may never have proof of your importance, but you are more important than you think. There are always those who couldn't do without you. The rub is you don't always know who. So perhaps today or sometime this week, it might be good to sit and have a think about those micro networks which we are all part of or which we might want to be part of. Think about what more we can do or what we can do differently, perhaps. Is there something we feel passionate about? A cause? A hobby? It really doesn't matter. Find a way of using this to establish, re-establish, or strengthen your own networks. It doesn't have to be any huge step or big gesture, and hopefully it will benefit you and all those you reach out to. For me, this speaks to ahimsa, the first of yoga's ethical and moral guidelines, as an exhortation for cultivating loving compassion and kindness. But the sentiment finds resonance across all belief systems. We are asked in all belief systems to be a good neighbour, and I think it's something that we can all learn from. So to finish up this address, I'd like to repeat the opening words from today's service. We gather as many drops, each winding our own path down life's surfaces and ruts. Here we pool together as a single body, flowing together for a time. Together we are a stream, at times even a river, with our shared force, we can travel towards oceans of meaning and seas of connection. Let us pool together when we can, and travel a while in each other's company, lifting each other up and keeping those connections going and reaching out to or even being the people there to catch those of us who need catching. Namaste.
When you're down and troubled and you need some love and care, and nothing is going right, close your eyes and think of me, and soon I will be there to brighten up even your darkest night. You just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, all you have to do is call, and I'll be there, yes I will. You've got a friend. If the sky above you should turn dark and full of clouds, and that old north wind begins to blow, keep your head together and call my name out loud, and soon you'll hear me knocking at your door. Just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, all you have to do is call, and I'll be there. I will. Now, ain't it good to know that you've got a friend? When people can be so cold, they'll desert you and they'll hurt you, and they'll take your soul if you let them. Oh, but don't you let them. Well, you just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, all you have to do is call, and I'll be there. Yes, I will. You've got a friend. You've got a friend. Ain't it good to know you've got a friend? Oh yeah, now you've got a friend.
Thank you, Kaylee, that was fab. So just to say thank you to some people, thanks, Bridget, for encouraging me to be up here and terrified yet again. Thanks to Kaylee, that was absolutely fantastic, just lovely. Thanks to Trish and Kevin and Janet and everyone else that works behind the scenes and to get things ready for services here. We really appreciate it. So the notices, there's tea and coffee downstairs. We'd be delighted to see you all down there for a cup of coffee and a chat. Meditation on Wednesday at 1:10, led by Pam. And there's a book club this week, and I'm going to get the day wrong. I think it's Wednesday. Correct me if I'm wrong. For a third hymn, we have hymn 67, We Sing Now Together. For my closing blessing, I'm taking words from John O'Donohue's Annam Cara. And it's called A Friendship Blessing. May you be blessed with good friends. May you learn to be a good friend to yourself. May you be able to journey to that place in your soul where there is great love, warmth, feeling, and forgiveness. May this change you. May it transfigure that which is negative, distant, or cold in you. May you be brought into the real passion, kinship, and affinity of belonging. May you treasure your friends. May you be good to them, and may you be there for them. May they bring you all the blessings, challenges, truth, and light that you need for your journey. May you never be isolated, but may you always be in the gentle nest of belonging with your Anamkara. Amen. Thank you.